news, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Had a good time today, maybe because it's Friday, maybe because the Jags played so well, maybe we've got high school football coming up this weekend, Labor Day weekend. Great beach weather. But my dermatologist said, not for me.
Stay under the umbrella, right?
A couple of weeks ago, carving on my head like it was a pumpkin. So I've got to stay out of the sun, which is fine. I enjoy watching the others frolic and enjoy themselves. And a lot to talk about here as we turn up your voice, the phone lines and text line. All the same, 343-0106. But we're turning up your voice, and we'll be talking about a number of things this hour. We got plenty of time to chat.
Yeah, coming up next segment, we'll talk with a good buddy of mine and a good buddy of Dan Brennan's,
yes.
JT Crabtree with the University of South Alabama radio network. He's a play-by-play host for the football team, also basketball and softball teams, and he was in Hattiesburg last night for that win over Southern Miss, and I want to talk to him, you know, of course about the football game, but more about how different this year is going to look in college stadiums, as kind of got a preview of what we'll probably see in the SEC at the end of this month with that game in Southern Miss last night. Also going to bring in the next host around 8:30, Jeff Poor, to kind of break down the prison situation as Governor Ivey yesterday announced the building of three new prisons in the state as we try to avoid having the feds come in and dictate to the state what we need to do about our Alabama prison population.
Yeah, so Jeff was kind of breaking some of that down for me. I heard him talking about it yesterday on his show. Great show, by the way. If you want to understand better understanding of Alabama politics from a conservative point of view, Jeff Poor is your guy.
Yeah.
And all his guests, you know, just excellent role of guests. So, you know, that's what I'll do. I'll quiz him like, okay, Jeff, what exactly, why did this happen? What does this mean? He's not short of answers.
No doubt. Also, I want to point you to our Facebook page, facebook.com/FMTalk1065, and a number of reasons for you to visit that page. First off, we have our weekly fishing photo contest, announced a new winner yesterday, so that means a new contest for this week where you can win an FM Talk 1065 fishing team t-shirt. All you have to do is upload a photo of you catching a fish, and please include the fish in the photo, but after that you get friends and family, whoever ends up with the most likes on their photos will win a fishing team t-shirt next Thursday. So visit for that. Also, all the great stories that Leanna continues to post to our Facebook page, including a photo, a couple photos from Hoover, Alabama yesterday.
This is amusing.
The headline here from Alan Rice says, when you spend all afternoon protesting against Hoover Police Department and realize you locked your keys in the car only to be rescued by the Hoover Police Department. And photos here of protesters who were, you know, railing against the police. Somebody locked their keys in their vehicle, and who'd they call? Well, they called the police.
I think the police might have been there anyway. They're protesting against the cops. If the cops are in the area, because you want to be able to kind of stare them down and say, we're against you.
Right.
And they were against them all day, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
They weren't against them at the end.
No, not when they needed to go home and realize their keys were in the car. Now, for me, you know, put my feet in the shoes of these protesters here. If you've spent all afternoon, probably all year, hating the police, yelling at the police, and you find out that you've locked yourself out of your vehicle, at that point, wouldn't you just break the window and get the keys yourself instead of the embarrassment of
anti-cop?
Yeah.
By almost committing a crime, breaking into your own car, but not involving the police, letting them come to your rescue.
That's too much. That was too good. Also, this afternoon, it might be too much for me and for Sean, because Leanna finally found a bag of something we were talking about, I think, about a month ago.
Yeah, because you were talking about that when I was just sitting in, kind of learning everything behind the scenes.
Yeah, and Brock's candy, yes. You know, the makers of candy corn. And this is their month to shine. Actually, next month is the month to shine for the traditional candy corn with Halloween on the way. But they decided to change the game a little bit, and they now have Thanksgiving dinner flavored candy corn. And it's not like one candy corn has all the flavors of Thanksgiving dinner, but they've got like green bean flavored candy corn and glazed carrots, turkey dressing, all that good stuff and stuffing.
I want to eat candy that makes me say, oh, green bean casserole.
it's probably,
that's what I want to do.
It's probably going to be awful, but we're going to Facebook Live, Sean and I, trying to stomach some of that Thanksgiving dinner candy corn. So check that out at facebook.com/FMTalk1065.
Leanna, by the way, really one of our big stars behind the scene.
Mm-hmm.
What she does on our social page is incredible.
Yeah.
She does a great job. If you're a fan of what you hear on the radio, make sure you go to our Facebook page because it really ties in really well together.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, you mentioned it earlier, Dan. This is a holiday weekend. I know a lot of people have big plans for Labor Day weekend, a lot of people off on Monday, and a couple things you can do in our area. Of course, on Monday, Labor Day, a Back the Blue boat parade in Orange Beach. And earlier this week, Sean Sullivan on Midday Mobile talked with the organizer of this Back the Blue parade event, boat parade, Jack Galetta, and they're trying to show support for the men and women in law enforcement, and that boat parade will be starting at 1 p.m. in Orange Beach. We've got some information on our social media if you want to check that out. So that's one thing you can do. And also, I'm excited about this, USS Alabama Battleship Memorial Park, mm-hmm. somewhere that we've broadcast from numerous times from right on top of the battleship. And, you know, they've had some tough times during this pandemic as well with tourists not traveling as much and not able to come and check out the battleship and the park. So this weekend they've got a really fun event, the Battle in Bama Custom Car Show. So they're expecting hundreds of vehicles and thousands of people, now socially distanced,
yeah.
but thousands of people, and coming to this first big event at the Memorial Park since the onset of the pandemic. Craig Rowley's the organizer. He said they've had to change things a little bit, but they're still expecting to have a bunch of people come out. So check that out this weekend. It's the Battle in Bama Custom Car Show. Should be some awesome rides there and some good times. So I'm glad to see USS Alabama Battleship Memorial Park getting back into business, and I can't wait until we have another remote there on one of our shows here, FM Talk 106.5.
I do believe I'm correct when I say that the number one tourist attraction in the state of Alabama is the USS Alabama.
Yeah.
Were you aware of that?
Yeah, it's I know that they kind of battle back and forth with the USS with the Space Museum, Space mm-hmm. and Rocket Center up in Huntsville. And when the Space and Rocket Center looked like they might have to shut down, you remember just last month they were calling for donations because
yeah.
they didn't have the revenue coming in during the pandemic. Fortunately, a lot of people donated to that cause and able to keep that going. But between those two, they seem to be the two that battled back and forth for supreme position with people coming in to the state to check things out.
Yeah, and it's a lot of people who are traveling like from west in Texas or Louisiana. They may be going to Disney or they're going through to Florida, you mm-hmm. know, and but they make it. They make sure that they stop there. The places that those folks stop, where you can find those Louisiana and Texas license plates around Mobile and Baldwin County, the parking lot of the USS Alabama,
uh-huh.
and Felix's Fish Camp, right there on the exit at the midway across the bayway.
Mm-hmm.
But the folks from Louisiana and Texas love our restaurants on the causeway, and they obviously very patriotic and love the USS Alabama. And think about this. We take it for granted, Dalton, the sight of the USS Alabama, what it looks like
mm-hmm.
from the interstate, what you know, how majestic it appears.
Yeah, glorious.
To us, it's kind of like, hey, there's the battleship.
Yeah.
To them, it causes them to turn around, come back, and check it out. So it's really cool that we've got that right here, just a minute or so from the downtown skyline of Mobile.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is a holiday weekend, and so many times in the past I've made fun of AAA because they have like a press release that they always have ready to go. No matter the holiday, and not so much the Rex, but they'll always say, this Thanksgiving, more people than ever are traveling for the Thanksgiving holiday. This Christmas, more people than ever expected to be on the roads and in the air for Christmas. Well, things have changed for them during this pandemic because fewer people are traveling. But a story here that with this Labor Day weekend, it seems like a lot of people are getting out and going to vacation. Now, this story from ABC News, and they found that flight bookings are actually only about a third of what they were this time last year. But reservations to Florida have jumped by 200%.
Wow.
A lot of people will be driving this Labor Day weekend, and it appears a lot driving to Florida. But the copy in this story, I have to read you this quote. TripIt is a travel itinerary app, and they provided this information.
Okay.
I don't know if I would have used this wording. They said, Florida is this year's hotspot. No. No. You don't want to use hotspot when you're talking about vacationing, not during the world of COVID-19. And another thing here.
There's some accuracy to that, but you don't want to use that.
There is. So a lot of people are heading down to Florida. Somebody else, a travel agent, let me see if I can find her quote here. She said, I think she said, people are dying to get out and vacation. Mm-hmm. Also, don't want to use that during this age of COVID-19.
I think that because of COVID-19, the talented press writers and the talented members of the staff have been let go, and they went with the younger group that doesn't cut into their
right,
their salaries much.
I'd like to know if they used those quotes on purpose, but just kind of funny so. When you're talking about that. But it's good news to me that so many more people are planning on going somewhere else during this COVID-19 pandemic and spending their money in the economy, because we need it right now.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to what we were talking about a couple of hours ago. We all were trying to be as responsible as we could be, seeing the pandemic for what it appeared to be in April, March, April, May, kind of scary, obviously, and still we got to have our guard up. But at some point, right, we just have got to do things that we love to do.
Yeah.
Try to do it safely. You know, I'm going to be at Saraland High School tonight for McGill-Toulon against Saraland, which, if you like football, I would recommend you watch that game. It's going to be a great one. But people want to get back and do things that make them feel normal again.
Well, that's been the big argument, not only around football, but other sports, getting those athletes, those student athletes back out there on the field to provide some entertainment and some levity. You know, we've all been going through it over the last 6 to 8 months, and same thing with travel. I can't even imagine being one of the people in the Northeast or on the West Coast, especially the people that have been scared to leave their own house, and a lot of those with good cause if they have some severe medical issues, right, and they don't want to. But imagine the wear on your mental health to day after day, especially if you've lost your job. You know, so many people are going through it right now. These breaks, these little vacations can do a wonder for your mental health. And I know that's what a lot of people are thinking this weekend. You know, they've been cooped up for months. Maybe Independence Day was still a little early to get out and do anything. But a lot of these people have been stuck in their homes. I think they're finally saying, enough is enough. I've got to get out there, maybe not for them, but for their family. And get out there on the beach and watch the waves crash. Get out there on a pond or a lake, or go to the mountains. I'm excited to see America moving again, and I'm also excited that our numbers are dropping, and hopefully they continue to drop with this COVID-19 pandemic.
And we will see what cost this has had on the mental state of not just Americans, but this thing is a worldwide pandemic.
Yeah. So, how about y'all? Are y'all traveling for the Labor Day weekend? Maybe going down to the beach like I am. Awful itinerary for me. We are planning on leaving after 5 p.m. today.
So 5:05.
Maybe the busiest time with people going down to the beach. But I did see this. We've got an FM Talk exclusive from our buddy Danny Spivey, who's on Southern Fairways Golf Radio Show every Sunday morning at 11 a.m.
I saw this.
He said, FM Talk exclusive. The Lee Greenwood tour bus was spotted outside of the Love's truck stop on 59, a possible Trump surprise visit in Orange Beach this weekend. Well, I don't know if Trump will be in Orange Beach this weekend, but it appears that the Lee Greenwood tour bus is there with or without Lee Greenwood.
God bless the USA for sure, right there. It is 19 minutes after 8 o'clock, and we're excited about the way the Jags performed last night. More on that coming up. Y'all, listen to Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig. Yeah, that's what I said. FM Talk 106.5, phone number, text line, one and the same. That's where we found out that Lee Greenwood's bus is broken down or something like that. As we get pertinent information like that. 343-0106.
Yeah, and man, Dan, I am excited this morning. Toe met leather last night, South Alabama at Southern Miss in the one of the first FBS games of the year. And South had a great night, a great start to their 2020 season, a 32-21 win over those Southern Miss Golden Eagles. And I thought, you know, what better time than now to get my good buddy JT Crabtree with the University of South Alabama. He's the radio voice of the men's basketball team, the softball team, and also play-by-play with the football team. And JT was in Hattiesburg yesterday. Good morning.
What's up, guys?
What is happening, man?
We're
going to
talk Jags.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk Jags and we're going to talk pandemic, because you always have to put pandemic into nearly any conversation. But first of all, how did the ride home feel? That was just a great performance.
Hey, I will take getting home at 3:15 a.m. after a road win anytime. And if you'll allow me to channel my inner John Ed Thompson,
Look at them Jaguars. Look at them Jaguars. Man, what a game last night. What a performance overall.
Yeah, it was great to see the offense do as well as it did. The defense shut down Southern Miss's run game. And even better than that, a couple local guys seeing the field and doing really well. I can't get over how well Jalen Tolbert has played, not just last night, but over the last half of last season. And that quarterback, Desmond Trotter, who started last night, they seem to have a good connection. But Tolbert, the former McGill Tooling guy, had 169 yards and two touchdowns receiving. What a great game.
Yeah, in his last two games combined, he's got six touchdowns.
Yeah.
He had four against Arkansas State in the season finale last year. He's unbelievable. He and Trotter have just a tremendous amount of chemistry, and obviously it showed last night. But, man, it's so good to see him just continue his upward trend that we heard so much about at McGill Toolin. He got hurt his freshman year. He tore his ACL, so he redshirted. So he's only going to keep getting better, which is scary considering how good he is now, but I'm glad he's playing for the red, white, and blue, right?
There's a term out there called All-American, and let's start that push right now for Jalen Tolbert. Not just All-Conference, but All-American. Meanwhile, we've got a few other things we wanted to ask you about.
Yeah, so I wanted to bring you on, JT, because this is one of the first games of the year, and it's going to be so different this year. And South started this crazy year of 2020 yesterday. Normally, they go up to the game the day before, but yesterday, busing. I think they left, you guys left, what, around 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon and showed up ready to play like an old high school Friday night.
I loved it. I really did. Just a quick drive up. It's 1.5-2 hours over there to Hattiesburg up and back. Most of the coaching staff loved it. I know offensive coordinator Kenny Edenfield told us, I'd rather prefer to spend the night in the hotel the night before. But, you know, it is what it is. It's different. Something that was kind of strange that we've forgotten all of this was the officials don't use traditional blow whistles anymore. It's now
right.
An electronic whistle where it's just kind of a device they hold in their hand, click a button, and it makes the whistle noise. But as we found out last night, you can't hear it half the time while play's going on. So we had some kind of squirrely mishaps, I guess you could call it. Some kind of weird scenarios where guys just couldn't hear the whistle, but clearly the play was over. And you know, the capacity is obviously different. It was 25% in Hattiesburg. They didn't have a marching band at all. They didn't have any band at all.
Really?
Very, very strange when it's a dead ball situation and there's just nothing. It was very eerie sometimes.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, if that's what we've got to do to play some college football this year, I guess we'll take it.
Yeah, and this is kind of a test run. You know, I'm so glad the Sun Belt is getting out there first because we're getting so many national games and so many eyes on teams like South Alabama. And it was so weird seeing the head coaches and the coaching staffs with their masks on all night and trying to shout through those, or the times when Steve Campbell was trying to keep it on his face while he was shouting at the players. That's something that'll take time to get used to, too, and something that we'll see when the SEC gets started later this month.
Oh, for sure. It's something different that we have to get used to up in the booth. You know, our instruction is when we're on air, we don't have to wear it, but we're encouraged to put it back on when we go to commercial. Now, are we able to do that every single time? Yes and no. But, you know, look at Tommy Hicks. He's our sideline reporter. He has to wear it the entire time. And so he's down on the field. He's not allowed to come back up to the press box once he goes down to the field. So he's down there for 4 hours walking around with a mask and just muffled, telling me jokes in my talkback system in my ear half the time.
Hey, JT, pass along our congratulations to everybody on campus and everybody in the football building. There was a lot of us sitting at home last night so excited for what we were witnessing on TV. So go Jags.
Absolutely, guys. I mean, it was fun. I mean, you can see the social media reaction from people. We got so much publicity being a nationally televised game. And I know Coach Steve Campbell is just over the moon to get that monkey off his back. That's his first road win here with the Jags. Our first road win in general for the Jags, October 11th, 2017 at Troy.
All right, there's JT. Got to go, man. Time for a break. Jeff Poor on the way. It is Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on FM Talk 106.5. The gentleman who follows us can dive into Alabama politics like a quarry. From the top of the ridge, he can dive on in deeply, and Jeff Poore is his name. And we're going to talk a little bit about prisons, the governor, and the federal government.
Exactly. So the big news yesterday, Governor Ivey came out and announced the proposed sites for three new men's prisons. And Jeff, this is something we've been talking about in our state for a long time now, and I know we've been discussing whether there'd be a special session to bring legislators back and talk about these, talk about what we're going to do with the prison overcrowding. Now, the way I understand it, the feds, much like they did in California a few years back, said, hey, if you don't get your prison population under control, we're going to have to move in and maybe start releasing people. Kind of tell us how this all got started with the prison overpopulation in Alabama.
Well, I mean, it goes back to the 1980s and when George Wallace was governor.
Hmm.
The last time we were in a federal receivership situation, Wallace saw a prison problem and said, I'm gonna kill two birds with one shot. I'm going to make this a jobs program. So part of a jobs program, he built a bunch of prisons around the state. The problem is multiple facilities, just a bunch of different facilities. Didn't work real well because it's better if you're more centralized. You pull those resources. You know, take something like mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Is it better to have a mental health ward at three facilities or 15 facilities, right? Or whatever it might be, whatever a special need you could think of for a prison facility. So that was problem one. But nonetheless, we kind of got along, and then things just started to deteriorate. Well, it's never been a Republican issue with prisons.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been kind of
a Democratic issue.
More of a Democratic issue.
Yeah.
I think the attitude among Republican voters, and correct me if I'm wrong, they're prisoners. They did the crime. They need to do the time, and we don't need to make it too easy on them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that aspect of that, which is always kind of, I don't know. It's always made legislators and governors a little reluctant to make this their big issue.
Right.
Because there's so much other things we need. Schools need fixed. Why are we worried about prisoners? We can't even teach our kids what five times two is or whatever.
Yeah, it's like, let's fix everything on the outside of the prisons.
Yeah.
I don't mean the outside of the structure, but all things in the state where people are walking free.
Yeah, it's tough to tell your citizens who are going to vote for you that you're going to spend the money on the prisons roads. Like, or
not appealing, right?
When was the last time either one of y'all been in a Alabama prison?
Just last weekend. No.
Really. I mean, that's
Dalton
the point.
Dalton reveals all.
It's out of mind, out of sight,
right.
You know, and you don't really see how awful these places are. I mean, there's like the bubonic plague or stuff. I don't know. Tuberculosis is rampant. It's pretty bad,
yeah.
And it needs to be addressed. And I would say this to my conservative brethren out there, if you really are truly a law and order advocate, then you want to have prisons that are on the up and up,
mm-hmm.
that meet the smell test of the federal government, of the DOJ, and that way you can use these facilities like they're supposed to be, maybe as either a deterrent or something that's going to correct these elements of society and make them better for society.
Oh, I want to talk about what Alabama would look like under that federal receivership. But first, what do you think is the bigger issue really at large? Is it the dilapidation of the prisons that we currently have, or is it the just amount of prisoners that we have that inhabit those prisons right now?
Yeah, I think the big part is the dilapidation of the prisons, despite what people may say. Some of these facilities are built in the 1920s.
Wow.
So the Tutwiler facility, obviously it's been upgraded since, but that's really, I mean, we're borderline third world gulag here, right?
If you've seen some of the video, it really, the flooding through the windows and the overcrowding in not just the prisons, but in particular rooms, cells.
And then you have this situation with personnel. That's a big part of it. And personnel that sometimes runs against the law. They run the facility in very brutal ways. The DOJ is coming down on some civil rights violations of some inmates, some guards just beating up prisoners. You hear these kinds of stories as well. There are systematic problems throughout the Alabama Department of Corrections.
Well, you know, and Sean's talked to Merrill in the past, and not Merrill, but
Marshall,
Attorney General Marshall in the past, and you have too. And you know, one thing that always comes up when we're talking about the overcrowding, a lot of people say, well, if you let those out that are in prison on minor drug offenses, then that would help with this overcrowding issue. But according to Attorney General Steve Marshall, there aren't very many that are actually in there for your, you know, standard marijuana offenses or anything. There are a lot of actual violent criminals and people who have broken the law dozens of times that are in these prisons. And when you look at California, and they went through this, except the feds actually did move in, and it wasn't the minor crime prisoners that they released. There's some really bad people that were back out on the streets in California. I know a lot of people are worried that could happen here.
It's a fairy tale that there's people in there for minor possession of marijuana or something.
Those are the county jails that you see.
You could go through it. It's a talking point that there's some kind of like draconian law out there with mandatory sentence for drug crimes, and we're having somebody in there having a dime bag of marijuana or whatever that's in prison for life because of that. That typically doesn't happen. Those are people that get out. We had a big problem, if y'all recall, with the Board of Pardons and Paroles, mm-hmm. where they were just letting people out. And they were using justification, the wrong kind of justification, not that this individual they were letting out was indeed reformed and no menace to society, but we're just too crowded. We got to start picking the least evil or whatever, the least threatening people, and start letting them out.
So the big news yesterday, Ivy said the three new locations of these prisons that will be built, and the way I understand it, we're going to have private companies that buy the land, right, and build the prisons, and then the state will lease those prisons and run those prisons after that. She chose Bibb County, Elmore County, and then Escambia County. Makes it a little easier there because those places already had prisons.
That's where the facilities are existing. You'll have, I would assume, the same personnel at the existing facilities just moved to these new facilities. That's probably how that's going to play out.
And so last question here, I guess. There's been a lot of talk about this, and people wanted there to be a special session called, have legislature come in. Was this actually the better move, to have Governor Ivey kind of just make the announcement instead? You mentioned a lot of the politicians don't want to have this decision by them. They don't want to be the author of this decision. Does it make it easier that the governor kind of came in and said, listen, this is what we're going to do?
I don't like this at all. This is the legislature kind of abdicating its role. It doesn't need to be on the outside here letting the governor make these decisions. The reason I say that is $900 million, the legislature just took the tough vote and made some decisions. They can say the taxpayers a lot of money, but instead they got this really strange, weird idea that the governor's going to build these new facilities, and with these new facilities versus the old facilities, there will be a cost savings, which is fair enough. You could use technologies and do different things that you couldn't do in the old facilities if you could just wire them correctly. Okay, fine. But if that cost savings is not going to be enough to pay for the expenses of the new facilities, I'm not convinced of that. That's what the governor is telling us. It would just be better if the legislature would come together and say, we're going to bond this, let's just do it this way, mm-hmm. and save the taxpayers money, but they're very reluctant.
Yeah, they'd rather not. That was something that we talked about yesterday in your bunker in the back here when you talked to half of the movers and shakers in the state. So thanks for the update on that. Thanks for your opinion. And who have you got coming up today on the show?
I got Steve Flowers, a columnist. You might have read him around the state. State Senator Clay Schofield will talk about U.S. Senate race, and we'll talk about prisons as well. April Marie Fogle from Alabama Today. Secretary of State John Merrill, and our usual Friday guest, State Senator Chris Elliott.
I got to say, Steve Flowers quickly becoming my favorite guest on the Jeff Poor Show.
He does have a following.
Jeff Poor Show follows us. We are Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig, Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. Taking a break. Back with you after this. It is FM Talk 106.5. It is Mobile Mornings. Final segment, Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig. Been a fun Friday.
Oh, yeah.
Jags put us in a good mood last night with a big win. And we got the weekend. You're leaving for the beach at 5.05 p.m. Brilliant move.
I'll get down there tomorrow at 6, I'm sure.
You'll be sliding in at sunrise.
Yeah.
And a number of things to talk about here before we wrap up the show, including, you know, all we can say is praise the Lord above, all survivors in the earthquake at Opie's Cafe.
Yeah.
Evidently, the one security camera in that area of the county up there was at Opie's Cafe.
Yeah.
Every bit of the any coverage I've seen has got to do with the security camera at Opie's Cafe.
And the meat. what would you call that there? The meat rack or something like that that they've got? And those sausage links kind of, you know, moving around.
If you've never seen a sausage link quiver, now you can. If you can somehow go to YouTube and pull up the security camera at Opie's Cafe. And how about the our on-air personality? I'd like to get him on. He's from WPFL, which I think is licensed out of Florida, out of Pensacola. He happened to be in the aforementioned Opie's Cafe.
Yeah.
Which is, I guess, the epicenter of the quake yesterday.
How about that?
And then they showed him on behind the board of his radio station talking about the experience of living through the earthquake.
So I'm all about marketing, Dan. And
I know you are,
Dalton. I think I've seen what that guy, I saw what that guy did. We should have, if we would have had our wits about us yesterday, we should have filmed some of us sitting here in the studio and make the camera shake a little bit. And then we would have gotten so much play on the local news last night. The effects of this 3.8 magnitude earthquake felt as far west as Mobile, Alabama, in the studios of FM Talk 106.5. And then we could have gotten to talk about our experience here and get some good self-promotion. But I guess, fortunately, the earthquake did not strike right here.
It blew out the windows at all the Wi-Fi buses. If we could have fabricated that story, then we would have been we could have made Mobile more relevant during the earthquake of 2020.
Yeah, well, you know, this is kind of strange how many earthquakes we've seen in the east side of Alabama, north part of Florida over these last couple of years.
You gave me a number for the state of Florida last year had how many earthquakes?
9 earthquakes.
I can't believe that.
And I don't know if you could feel all of them. They said most were between like 1.8 magnitude and I think 3.1. So this 3.8 was a relative monster.
I have a
yesterday.
Question, Dalton, if you don't mind. If it doesn't make any part of you quake, is it actually an earthquake?
Nah.
Now you say, if you can't feel the earthquake, you know, there's a lot of analogies we could use there.
More of like an earth shiver of some sort.
You know, a bear in the woods and all that kind of stuff. But if you can't feel the earthquake, does it qualify as an earthquake? And I guess scientifically it does.
Yeah, well, it's a fascinating story to me, and it's fascinating to Sean Sullivan, too. And we're going to have another guest on this afternoon on Midday Mobile, geology professor at the University of South Alabama, Alex Beebe, because believe it or not, we've got fault lines here. I mean, we've seen some earthquakes in the past. I don't know how big a potential earthquake could possibly be here. I'm sure Alex Beebe has the answers to that. So if you're interested in this just like I am, you'll want to check out Midday Mobile. I'd say listen to the whole show, but BB will be on at 12:15 this afternoon.
I think I saw him on KRG News last night, so he's the earthquake guy, I guess, in this part of the state.
Yeah, well, that wasn't exactly a natural disaster yesterday, more of a natural phenomena, if you want to call it that.
I would say so.
And we did have a natural disaster here just a couple weeks ago over in Louisiana and Texas, and we all know how hard they got hit by Hurricane Laura. And again, this being a Friday heading into a holiday weekend, a lot of our law enforcement, a lot of people that left here and went over to the Lake Charles region of Louisiana to help out as they try to rebuild after those 150-mile-per-hour winds from Laura slammed into their coast. They're working this weekend, and we've talked about the Mobile County Sheriff's Office sending the food truck over and cooking breakfast, lunch, dinner for those first responders. And then looks like yesterday or today, you've got 2 Baldwin County fire departments also on their way over there to the Louisiana-Texas state line. They're going to drop off supplies, water, food, and more. Foley Fire Department, they left yesterday morning, and Gulf Shores Fire Rescue also left, and we've talked about the water issue there. They don't have clean water because, you know, Laura came through and made it difficult. No power, no clean water, so that bottled water is so important to them
now. Yeah, and that part of the state of Louisiana often comes to our part of the state, to our beaches for their vacation. So a lot of them probably planning on coming here for the Labor Day weekend, and now they've got bigger issues, so they're not coming this way. They've got to take care of business at home.
Yeah, and one of my favorite Bringing us back to the earthquake, somebody texted here. One of my favorite things. Remember Flomaton? That was the place of the Flomo clowns just a few years ago.
Well, I know Flomaton, but I didn't know about the Flomo clowns.
Yeah, they had a clown issue in Flomaton just a few years ago. Where,
what exactly was the issue, Dalton?
Well, somebody... I'll say somebody dressed up as a clown, but it very well could have been an actual clown that was hopping out of the woods and scaring the bejesus out of people.
That was in Flomaton?
That was in Flomaton. So many were wondering if the earthquake might have shaken some of those Flomo clowns back out of the trees yesterday.
Is that Flomaton's leprechaun, basically?
But Flomo clown is the Crichton leprechaun of Flomaton.
Okay.
I wanted to get to this story before we wrap it up. And if you'd humor me, because I found this scary/fascinating, but Flint, Michigan... of course, we know them from their issues with the lead in their water over the last few years.
And they're clowns.
And not the Flint clowns. But they're doing something at the Flint, Michigan airport that is super new and super strange. The first airport in the United States to use a smart helmet. They're going to have law enforcement at the Flint Bishop Airport wearing these smart helmets. And they check the temperature of people walking around in the airport.
Oh, that's weird.
Very weird, like RoboCop weird. The airport director said this device is a game changer. It has the ability to perform several functions, including detecting the temperature of multiple people at a distance of up to 21 feet with precision accuracy. And they're going to be doing that to screen incoming and outgoing passengers. These helmets that look like fighter pilot helmets. And just like Terminator, you know, where you see... from the eyes of Terminator during the movie, and he's locking in on these different people. And
that's how they're getting temperatures?
That's what it looks like. They're locking in on the body temperatures of these people that are flying or coming in. How weird is that? This year of 2020, we've now got law enforcement at airports wearing smart helmets to check temperatures.
That's the – and by the way, that is the airport – where Will Ferrell's basketball team, the Flint Tropics. That's the airport that they travel in and out of.
ELE, Everybody Love Everybody. One of my favorite movies. This also has license plate recognition and facial recognition technology.
That's too weird.
We've gone too far, Dan.
We have gone way too far. And Flomaton with the clowns, y'all calm down. It's FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig wrapping up, and Jeff Poore on the way next.